Hello. Hi, were you waiting for some music? Well, there isn't any. Hi, you're listening to the voice of Vashon 101.9 on Vashon Island. Beautiful sunny day today. We are experiencing some pretty interesting technical difficulties here still, and reprogramming things, and our engineers are happily helping, but we didn't get to the point where we could do the music. So, Stirring the Pot is on, and we're live. I'm Linda Nygaard. I'll be your host for the next hour. And along with me, my cohorts here are Tom Conway. Hi, Tom.
How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Excellent. I'm good. I'm beaming. It's sunny out.
It's lovely out. And Susan Powell, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Thanks. Yeah, really nice to have the sun after the deluge.
Isn't it? Boy, did
some
we.
Some people are still really underwater.
Yeah, they really are. Yeah. So we'll just ask our audience to bear with us a little bit today while we get through some kind of interesting little puzzles. And really all we have to do is chat. So I think
which has never really been a problem.
Well, not recently it hasn't been. Occasionally we're speechless, but that doesn't happen very often.
No. I think it was 2014.
Was it that soon?
Yeah,
it was
that long. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I had some dental work done.
Yeah. So anyway, we're sitting here in the studio thinking about a lot of things, and I haven't seen you guys in a couple of weeks. So what you been doing? Susan, what's going on in your world these days?
Oh, you know, it's been pretty busy in a way. I've been worked 4 days last week, and that's about max for me.
Well, working, yeah.
Away from home.
Yeah. And she's the bravest woman in the room because she substitute teaches.
I know.
I confess that high schoolers, adolescents scare me.
Yeah, they scare me too. I love them to death.
I'm never sure what.
But they're so unpredictable. Yeah.
I have PTSD and go back to high school.
But on my day off,
yeah,
I thought, because I grew peppers, a variety of different red peppers, and I ripened them in the house, and I dehydrated them, and I ground them into, flakes, not powder.
Good.
Exactly.
Oh, good.
And that meant I needed space for them on my spice rack, and the spice rack was a real mess. Well, I have two of them, and they were both a real mess. So I took all the spices down and kind of rebottled them, a large jar that could go into a small
little
jar
ones.
And
yeah.
start. Yeah, yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
Well, maybe
and in the process, I discovered something that I had completely forgotten about, Marmite. Do you know what Marmite is?
Oh, I love Marmite.
I don't really know what it is. I know that, is it the same as Vegemite?
Kind of.
Yeah.
I like Vegemite better, but
I've never had Vegemite, but Marmite is, it's yeast. It's a caramelized yeast.
It's a fermented kind of yeast.
Yeah, full of B vitamins. And
I love it on toast.
That's what I've been having.
I just love it on toast.
Speaking of going to work, I take, because I don't have time to really eat anything until the break, I make myself a little egg sandwich. So now it's an egg sandwich with Marmite.
With Marmite. Excellent. Excellent.
So anyway,
how
that
about
was
you,
my
Mr.
discovery.
Tom?
What's been going on with me?
Yeah. Have you been doing anything or just sitting around?
just sitting around picking my nose.
Yeah, I figured.
No, I...
Watching the paint dry.
Watching the paint dry. I have, with the big rainstorms, I pretty much, I sort of feel like I'm a lighthouse keeper and I'm just trying to keep my house from flooding.
Yeah.
Because I have a basement and it's a basement that I think there's like a subterranean cavern of it's a place where the squirrels can do laps, when it rains. And so I put a sump pump in, and this time I was just waiting for it, not the power not to go out, because once the power goes out, the sump pump doesn't work. But I was spared, but I was kind of up all the trying to get that, and I'm keeping my greenhouse from blowing down. And
You already had that happen.
I had it happen with snow. So now, but all is well. The place, in fact, guess what? My house is completed as of like half an hour ago. My house is finished. The paint job was finished. My painter started September 15th, and because of weather, it's now November 16th?
So beautiful, Tom. I love the colors you chose and that grand old dom.
Yeah, I'm really happy.
Yeah, the
really
colors are beautiful, the photos just make me happy when I see them.
Thanks. I'll tell you. Who knew house paint could make you so happy?
Yeah.
Well, Does anybody want to know what I was doing?
Oh, and oh, yeah. Linda, what have you been doing with yourself?
Not as much as you, that's for sure. I've been in the food world. I'm really stuck in beets and squash. And I made a squash salad the other day that just knocked me out, and I want you to make it.
Okay.
You cube a butternut squash.
Okay.
Make it
skin little, it, cube it.
Skin it, cube it.
Okay.
De-seed it, you know.
Got it.
Olive oil, roasting pan, yep. Salt and pepper,
mm-hmm.
30 minutes.
Yep.
Then it comes out, and you put a lemon tahini dressing on it. With some...
I thought you said pomegranate.
Pomegranate seeds.
Pomegranate molasses.
And, well, you can do it both ways. You can do it both ways. So, I like the one with tahini and za'atar. It was wonderful. That's the key. Before you roast it, sprinkle it with za'atar. There. Thank you for reminding me of that.
You bet.
It was really, really good, and it's so pretty. So, if anybody has any, you know... wanting to do something different with squash. It's beautiful with the red pomegranate seeds on it.
And the color of the gold.
And the color of, even the za'atar, you know, colors it. So
cool.
It's that's what I've been doing. And I've been trying to walk. And
what'd you do with the beets?
Oh, you know, I'm a roasted beet fanatic. Mm-hmm. And I just put about 8 giant beets in the oven. And I roasted them. Last night, I just had beets and butter. You know, beets mm-hmm. with some butter and salt mm-hmm. and pepper. I have... recently discovered fermented beets at Thriftway. I didn't make them. Oh, man, are they good. It's like a sort of a sauerkraut kind of taste. I think there's some cabbage in it, too. Mm-hmm.
But there's a little sweetness from the beets.
There's a little sweet from the beets.
And is it shredded like sauerkraut?
Yes.
Oh.
And it's so easy. It's just a little, kind of like a little relish or a little mm-hmm. tiny salad.
And probiotic.
And it's great on a sandwich.
Yeah.
Hot dog.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then tonight for the beets,
mm-hmm.
a hot dog?
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking like sauerkraut on the Howard.
Sorry, some of us are slow learners.
Mildred, I said a hot dog, woman. Hot dog. This just shows you how she doesn't listen to me, and that's why I'm breaking up with
you. Yeah, that I know. We'll have to do that someday.
Okay.
Really interesting. That's interesting to me that you would think of a hot dog.
Yeah. It's one of my 4 major food groups.
Oh, I love hot dogs. I really do.
German sausages.
Anyway, back to beets.
Oh, yeah.
Tonight's menu is a beet salad. You know, just little cubes of roasted beets with some goat cheese, a little bit of green onion, some balsamic. I like white balsamic on beets.
I do, too.
I love white balsamic.
Well, speaking of white, I like white beets.
Oh.
I grew some white beets.
Are those different than golden beets?
They're different than golden beets.
Never heard of them.
I haven't either.
No, and I'm going to, they're delicious. I mean, I love all beets.
White beets?
But, but for cooking with them, you can dice them, or you can do anything with them, and they don't make the whole dish
pink.
You
don't turn purple?
Which is like, I would put beets in more things, except that I don't want to color everything.
Yeah.
That runny beet color. Mm-hmm. I just like to keep that separate. So,
I wonder if that's the beet they use for sugar beets.
No,
I don't think so,
because
I've seen sugar beets and they're really huge.
They're huge.
These are regular
beet
size, and their greens had like a yellow stem, like a rainbow chard.
Interesting.
A yellow rainbow chard stem.
Speaking of sugar beets, do you know? I read this, and I believe it, that sugar beet sugar is different in its composition from cane sugar.
Oh,
and that cane sugar, you got to buy cane sugar. It has to say cane sugar on the package. It can't just say sugar. If it just says sugar, it means it's beet sugar.
Can I get personal with my bees? I'll tell
you
about bees.
Yeah, sure.
So I learned this from a wise and sage beekeeper. Not to use beet, because you can get it's so much cheaper. Beet sugar so
it
much
is.
Cheaper.
And
if
you go to we're buying C&H.
Yeah, there's also like if you go to Cash and Carry, one of those places, it's commercial,
mm-hmm.
and it was for basically for the beehives, so you can feed the bees.
We do that during the winter.
Sugar water, so you really want to use cane sugar, because this is what made me realize I'm just going to eat cane sugar, because if it gives bees diarrhea and dysentery. If they use beet sugar.
Really?
Yeah, so it does something to their body. So I figure, well, it'll probably do something to, you know.
Oh, yeah, we've had some loss of bees over the winter, too. Yeah. And it may just be that.
Yeah, so use cane sugar.
Well, and, you know, the beets are different. I mean, you don't eat those beets.
No.
They're nasty, I guess.
I always wonder how you could get sugar out of that.
We have a lot of nasty food on this show. So let's moving right along here.
Yeah. Whoa.
Tom, I wanted you to tell me a discovery that you had this week about something really fun that's going to go on in this particular little town.
Oh, yeah. I was, you know, one of my favorite sites to go on, it's a you know, nonprofit, 501c3, is Vashon Events, and they have a lending library for musical instruments. They do a lot of great stuff. They have,
they really do.
They keep us abreast of everything that is going on. And one of the things I saw that I was sort of delightfully surprised is there's going to be a Winterfest, and I'm just looking for, I've got it right here, my little Winterfest information. It's at Eggie's Farm, and they're basically opening up their farm. They're going to have musicians, they're going to have crafters, they're going to have homemade goods and crafts, and it's going to take place on November 7th from 11 to 4 p.m.
That happened.
November 27th?
27th. You said 7th.
Oh, did I say 7th?
You said 7th.
Oh, God.
2-7.
I need supervision. I'm sorry. Forgive me, kids. It's Saturday, September 27th.
No, 11 it's November 27th.
What did I say?
September.
Oh, my God. I am... I'll have my physicals in a month. Okay.
What's in that flask, Tom?
I was gonna say, where's the memory clinic? Okay, Saturday, November 27th, 11 to 4.
Okay,
and it's at Eggie's Farm. And if you don't know where Eggie's Farm is, it's just down when you're going to Liza Beulah Park.
Right,
and it's just on the left side, about halfway down.
Down that windy road.
Yeah, it's on 220th, 13609 Southwest 220th. And so what they've mentioned is that it's going to feature 20 local artisans and makers, 3 live bands, Santa photos, hot drinks and food.
Wow.
And everything from handmade jewelry to wreaths, ceramic, leather goods, soaps.
Holy cow. Sounds great.
It sounds really good. And here's the band lineup, just because I think it's real interesting. The band lineup is going to be Western African Marimbas. The Frog Holler Cajun Band and the Old Docton, which they say is rootsy and folksy, which is...
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, you put on something pretty and you can sit on Santa's lap between
well,
noon
yeah,
and two.
You better put on something warm. Can you tell us where it is? Isn't it in the greenhouse?
It's in the greenhouse, yeah.
So,
it's an outdoor event, rain or shine.
Yeah.
It's in a 100-foot greenhouse, so wear boots, dress for the cold, is family-friendly and COVID-safe. Masks are required. No dogs, please.
Good. No dogs.
And do you know that one of the Eggies is Amanda? And she is a kindergarten teacher.
I don't know how
she gets all of this done, to tell you the truth. And also, I think she might be, I know she's very deeply involved in the teachers union. She might actually be the president this year of the local or something.
Oh, wow.
Can't remember.
Yeah, she's amazing. And she makes a mean egg sandwich.
Does she?
Does.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I've had her egg sandwiches.
Boyfriend.
I love those.
Yeah. And they grow their own. What I love is that they grow. This is an idea I had, but I'm glad they took it and ran. Not that it was... They didn't take it from me. They did it themselves. But anyway, I digress. They grow their own tomatoes. I also thought it was a brilliant idea to grow your own tomatoes for a sandwich that you're producing in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'd pay what you could for
a good decent tomato.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, hey, I got one other thing. And really quick, I'll make it quick. I got to look at this consternation that I was going to ramble on again. I just want to let you know, we'll talk about it next show, but I want to just whet your appetite for it. The Mackay Farm is going to have some really cool things going on in December. And I think you'll want to hear about them. So we'll talk about those in the next show, but I just wanted to whet your appetite because they'll start in December.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I wanted to tell you about a new... podcast I discovered, and I don't know, I'm probably late to the party, you know, I usually am, but I discovered a new podcast called ToastedSisters.org. .com. Toasted Sisters. Anyway, it is a Native American podcast, and it's Native American women, mostly from the East Coast, and they're talking about Native American ways and food, mostly. It's a food podcast about Native American cooking.
Oh, cool.
And they are... fabulous. And I'm going to reference them later in our show because I want to tell you some things that they said, but I would really encourage people to listen to it. I got really hooked. There's some pretty brave women talking about, you know, when Thanksgiving's coming and how mixed emotions we get about Thanksgiving and the Pilgrims and the Native Americans. And there's a lot of, you know, there's homeless issues and all these things going on right now. But these women also have hope, and they have actual steps that we as non-natives can take to help, I don't know, acceptance levels or understanding. And it's just so beautifully done. And one of the things I really love about it is they laugh a lot on this little podcast. And it's just, it's really, it's enlightening and really fun to listen to.
That, that stuff like that is, you know, podcasts are so amazing. And one like this especially, because it's a corner of the world we don't know about, maybe. Most of us
don't. You know, and we don't. It,
there are all these doors that get open to you know, sort of, they're fascinating lives that we don't even know about.
I know. We'll talk about that some more in a little while, too.
Yeah.
Susan, I wanted to ask you a question about working again. And has that changed the way you're cooking, or are you adjusting to working and cooking?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I get home fairly early. I'm usually home by 3:30. So dinner's
so you
not
still
until
have, yeah.
I still have time. And kind of, I don't know, cooking has always been what I do to relax.
I know.
You know,
I know.
I can stand there and I can chop the vegetables and I can think about, and I can listen to the sound of the onion going in, or I can, you know, walk over to the refrigerator and go, oh, yeah, I've got to put this in. Or, you know, it just takes my mind off of other things and I can focus. And so it's never been a chore for me.
So
I
it
can't
has
understand
you don't,
people who don't like to cook.
Well, yeah, if they don't like to cook. Yeah. But I was thinking more, and you're getting home early, but there are so many people that aren't getting home until like 6:30 or 7, and what do they do?
Yeah,
and
I think that would be really hard.
Yeah, I think in later winter, we're going to devote a show to Easy Peasy.
Oh, I'd love that. Maybe four ingredients or something.
Yeah,
or two.
In a sheet pan or something like that.
Sheet pan roasts.
They're really good.
Yeah.
And easy. You know, one thing I wanted to comment on our freeform conversation here today is to tell the audience that, yes, we are going to have a Facebook page. And on that Facebook page, that's where you'll find recipes. We can't really post the recipes on our Voice of Vashon page too easily. I mean, we can, but one is enough, you know?
And plus on a Facebook page, what's great is you can just link to the original source.
Exactly.
So, you're not, there's no copyright infringement. You're just directing them to the source.
Right, you're just directing them somewhere.
Oh, nice. We could actually put the songs in there then.
No, I can't do that.
No, we can't do songs. Oh,
songs are a whole different story. They'll come find you. There are people, I think, in caves just listening 24/7.
Oh, they are. Those guys came to my restaurant once.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're waiting for
they shut you down. No Petulia Clark for you, mister.
It's time for tidbits.
Time for tidbits,
Tidbits is kind of one of my favorite sections of the show, where I just tell you some funny things or interesting things that I found. And do you know Fluffernutter?
I have never even wanted to know Fluffernutter.
I was getting it mixed up with banoffee or banoffee pie.
Oh, banoffee pie. Yeah. No, it's a whole different deal.
No, I'm not familiar.
Okay, so Fluffernutter is very popular in the Northeast.
I know, I've heard of it.
And they have sandwiches made with peanut butter and marshmallow fluff. And that is a Fluffernutter.
Is it a product that comes that way?
No, you make it.
Oh, you make
it. You get the fluffy stuff in the jar. And mix it up with peanut butter, which to me, I don't know. But anyway, Fluffernutter is now in the dictionary. It's now a word instead of a colloquialism from the Northeast, because so many people didn't know what it meant.
Right there with hot dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what would be an improvement now because of Fluffernutter? I'm going to give it a boost.
Okay.
Is the s'more. A s'more with Fluffernutter instead of just plain old marshmallow with peanut butter and chocolate sounds pretty darn dreamy in my book.
So maybe like a Reese's peanut butter cup with some marshmallow fluff.
That'd be good too.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just couldn't leave my idea alone, could you?
Oh. You know, like those people who say, I followed your recipe, except I substituted this.
Oh.
And then I baked it a lot longer than you said.
I know,
but
this
didn't work.
This is off script, but I have to. We have to bring this up because Because we do. Okay. I'll make it really quick.
Oh,
maybe
I
won't. Okay, good. I want
to
make it quick. I'll tell you what. If you want to be entertained, you have to read the New York Times. If you know, I splurged and got the cooking section, and so they people comment on all the recipes. And what's so fascinating about it is, it's basically we are a country of self-righteous cooks.
That, exactly.
Like they'll have somebody who basically is a a 3-star Michelin chef that will come up with a recipe, and then you'll get Eloise Luida from Bennington Falls. And she'll go like, well, I never use beef broth in my beef vegetable soup. I prefer to, use tomato soup. And then people go into great detail about why the recipe didn't work for them. Mm-hmm. And what happens is the most entertaining ones, they boost them up to the top of the comment list if you get thumbs up. And so usually the most ridiculous ones get a big boost. And you're reading these were like no one can leave it alone. It'll be like something with 4 ingredients and go, well, instead of a half a cup of sugar, I used a quarter cup of sugar and it came out less,
it was
sweet.
It wasn't cloyingly sweet anymore. Yes. That cloyingly sweet. Or they say, is it possible to make this low fat?
Yes. All right, like an omelet, it'll be an omelet recipe. And they go, can you make this without eggs?
Aquafaba.
Yeah, aquafaba. You could, I guess. Yeah.
Anyway, I just had to go on about that.
I subscribe to the same thing.
Yeah. I might have to get my subscription. Yeah.
It's really
fun.
It's really fun to watch and read that, I think. We're all baking this year. Are we? Are we baking?
Oh, yeah, ma'am. I'm always in the baking mood.
Yeah, me too.
Well, we have to have bake sales. Sarah's got kids wanting to go to Costa Rica.
Oh, and they're having a bake sale.
That's a lot of cookies.
That's a lot of cookies.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if you've ever made a tassie.
Oh, yeah, always at Christmas time.
I love tassies.
Always. I love
that's
them.
That's what I'm thinking.
Tell people what a tassie is, please.
A tassie is like a little 2-bite pie.
A little pecan pie.
A mini muffin tin. But you can make it with pumpkin. You can make it with anything.
Well, you can make it with anything. But tassie is pecan.
Is usually.
Pecan. It's kind of my mom's.
I think tassie is the little tiny thing.
My mom makes it.
With the easy dough. With
cream cheese in the dough.
Cream cheese. So it's soft. Yeah.
Do you know there's an implement to push that into the pan, by the way?
I thought there might be.
It's the best it's the best money spent for a wooden object.
What do you call it?
It's like a little
tassie tamper.
It's a tassie tamper. It's basically a dowel that has a round ball on the end that's wooden also.
Mm-hmm.
And when you push it into the muffin tin, the ball turns into this perfectly formed cup to hold your pecan slurry or your pumpkin.
Yeah, because that's the fussy part.
Yeah.
Is getting that little tiny crust in that.
I have an extra
tiny
one I can hook you up
with.
I'm gonna. I want to try it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, do you know who Rose Barenbaum is?
Yeah.
The cake goddess.
I do.
She has a tip. I, for years, have been baking cakes, and I cannot figure out why sometimes they dome in the center.
Oh, it's because you're a failure.
I know, but you weren't supposed to say that out loud.
I'm sorry. You have to understand, I'm not being cruel. We joke around.
Yeah, we do. Okay,
we do.
You were wearing the wrong earrings.
That's probably what it was, yeah. Well, actually, there's a reason that happens, and it's the way, I thought it was my oven, but it's the way that the cake bakes. And to alleviate that, Rose advises tin foil. You get a big piece of tin foil out and line it with wet paper towels, and then fold that tin foil into a strip as wide as your cake pan, the rim of your cake pan, and wrap that around your cake pan. And she said what that does is it keeps the outside of the cake a little bit cooler, because what happens is the outside of the cake bakes first. And so the inside of the center of the cake keeps raising. And so if you do this little cooling thing, you get a perfectly flat cake, which is ever so much more easy to layer and frost. And, you don't have to cut that dome off, which I always did.
We were watching Great British Baking Show, and we could see that they had like cozies that went around the cake tins.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rose Barenbaum sells those too. She said, you can go to her website and buy one, and mm-hmm. they're the silicone little things that go around. But she said, really, just use some tinfoil and wet paper towels, and we'll do the same thing.
Yeah, and I usually use strips you of could reuse towels. It. Not paper towels, but regular, like
I've
old towels.
I've never done that. And I just baked cut a thousand
the,
cakes.
I just cut the towel. Yeah. And then I can just tie it like sort of in a knot, and it's wet, like a wet terry cloth. And that
so
works
it goes
really
in
well.
The oven wet like that?
Yeah, without any foil.
Without any foil.
And it doesn't burn.
Oh,
because well, you're not burning it. It's not like a pie. Cakes cook a little lower.
Right.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. That's great.
I know. I thought it was really good advice, and I haven't baked a cake since I read that.
No
but I
more
will.
Domed cakes.
No more domed cakes for me.
No.
That's for sure. And I just wanted to, maybe you guys already know this, but did you know that there is a little farm in Oregon that raises and processes and sells saffron?
No.
There is.
Yeah, I heard.
Who picks it, man?
That's, she does. This is a young woman's business, and she has, she's up to 3,600 flowers a day, and she can do. Is that right, or was it an hour? It was some ridiculous number.
No, it can't
number.
Be in an hour.
But she said she stores them, you know, because the little saffron threads are very fragile. So she stores them in pizza boxes and lays them in a single line so that they dry in the pizza box and they don't get crushed. And she, you know, she sells them. She got lots of matching grants and funds from USDA. And she put up a greenhouse, and she did. She just, it was kind of a magical thing for her. She never intended to raise saffron.
Hmm. And for people who don't know what the plant, saffron is from a crocus, which is a spring flower.
Oh, thank you, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a little spring flower. You'll see, usually you'll see the blue and the yellow ones, and this one is a what they call a species crocus, so it's very specific.
It's not like the crocus you have in your garden. It's a different
one. No, I've grown them.
It's a different one.
They're pink. They're usually a pink petal, as I recall.
They're really delicate.
Mm-hmm. She, here's that 30.
And you pull the stamens, right?
And the bulbs pull the stamens out. My bulbs didn't come back. They grew just 1 year.
Oh. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. She has 400,000 plants.
That is a special person
that
can do
wonderful?
That.
But you know, I have heard of a rooftop New York City saffron farm.
How fun.
Yeah. Oh, where it must be in bins where you're standing up, because I just don't want to bend down.
Well, I don't want to harvest all that, but obviously it's a moneymaker. You know, she's doing really well.
Yeah, it's probably one of the most expensive, I think, spices out there.
Oh,
yeah,
it really is.
Yeah, it is, absolutely.
Is that a spice or an herb? What would you call that?
I
don't know.
I'd call it an herb.
Herb, okay.
I'd call it a spice.
With herb.
But
I don't know.
What do I know?
I don't know nothing.
I don't know. I don't know nothing.
I don't know nothing.
None.
Flutter
well,
nothing.
I think that spices are more hard. They're seeds and stems and more
that's
bark
true.
And things. And herbs are more of the soft.
Plant.
Even though when they're dried. Uh-huh. They're herbaceous.
I guess. Yeah, that's interesting.
Kind of my definition.
Well, you know, 'tis the season for Thanksgiving.
Yes, ma'am.
And I saw an ad for pumpkin spice Spam. And then I did a little research on it, and pumpkin spice Spam, say that three times fast, has been around for a long time. I didn't know
Who knew?
Because we are not shopping that much at Walmart.
Well, and not that much for Spam.
It is. In fact, the two, I think that's the only place, they have it on the Walmart.
Website.
Yeah, do you want to see? You want me to tell you how they market it?
Yeah, I want to. Okay. Because
this is what they say. They say, "Step aside, pumpkin spice lattes. The fall is now Spam in all caps. Pumpkin spice season. Hints of cinnamon, clove, allspice, and nutmeg." They don't say anything about pig parts. Okay, nutmeg. Give this new limited edition variety a subtle sweetness. Mm-hmm. Fry it up with waffles, hash, or eggs to make the perfect breakfast or brunch pairing. I think if you're making this, the people you're dining with don't refer to it as a brunch. But anyway,
well, now that's not true.
That's
Tom.
Kind of snobby.
That
I apologize.
That was a snotty thing to say.
And my Walmart.
I am
going to
totally
too.
Take that back. I'm sorry. That was snobby.
Well, I wouldn't call you a snob.
I'm not a snob. That's why I didn't
by
want
by any stretch. But I, you know,
I was looking for humor. I was just it's like a cheap humor, a cheap shot.
It. Well. The first time I went to Hawaii, I was stunned. I had no idea they love Spam so much.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Spam sushi.
Yeah, I think it's definitely part of the culture.
But anyway, I just thought, you know, Spam, pumpkin spice, something. Maybe it would be a stocking stuffer for Christmas.
And you know, on the bright side, it's 7 grams of protein per serving.
How much fat?
We don't know about that.
Yeah, we wouldn't want to talk about that. Let's talk a little bit about what's in season. You know, it's 'tis the harvest season, and as I said, I'm into the squash and the beets. And Tom, you're kind of into the apples right now.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of the apples. Apples are such a great, you know, it's really interesting. Like a lot of fruit, it doesn't get the notoriety of the cultivar or the type of apple. Like, you know, it's like wine. Now, apples, people go like, oh, I really love a Brambley's for a pie, right, or John of Gold for a crisp, or, mm-hmm, you know.
Or but, King.
Or King, exactly. Yeah. Or like, what's the one? There's one in the early summer that's basically just the total applesauce apple that everybody uses. I can't remember the name of it right now. But
like a Macintosh?
No, transparent. That's it. It's called a transparent.
Oh, okay.
And it's a really good, if you like mushy applesauce, it's really good.
Mm-mm.
I know. I like chunky.
Mm-hmm.
I like chunky. But, you know, we were talking, Linda. Linda was the one who brought it up to me, the subject of... I have some apples, and sometimes when you're slicing into them, it looks like they're just colored. Like there's this sort of weird translucence in it, and that's called a water core. So if you ever get, and it really happens a lot with Fuji apples, and a lot of times people think it's sort of a bad thing, like the apple's rotten, but it's not really rotten. It's just the physiological change in the in the fruit due to extreme temperature changes. Like this summer, we had a lot of extreme temperature changes.
Sure.
And there's a whole chemical reaction, which I'll spare you. But what happens is the apple then absorbs more water, and in the process, it really absorbs, it sort of creates more sugar. And so those water spots or those, mm-hmm, water cores in the apple that are sort of a different color, a translucence, hold more sugar than the other parts of the apple. So it's actually sweeter.
So how's the texture?
Texture is a little different. It's not as crispy. It's, mm-hmm, more of a, it's not mushy, but it doesn't have that dry crispiness.
That dry
it crunch. Has sort of a wet, wow, crispiness.
Well, does it make a difference in cooking?
No, not that I've ever experienced.
Have you used Fuji for pie?
I have. And it's a really sweet pie. Mm-hmm. You know, there, in fact, this is probably like, well, in my orchard, it's animals know what is the sweetest, mm-hmm, thing. They really do.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of apple trees, mm-hmm, and the one they always go for, there are a couple, and one of them is Fuji, mm-hmm, the raccoons, and I'm sure it's the, you know, rats or mice or rodents. They climb up that tree and they get them, they grab them, they eat them because there's such a high sugar, mm-hmm, content. And the sugar is such a rarity in nature that, you know, animals are so.
They want it. Yeah. They crave it. Yeah.
Yeah, they crave it. So other apples, like the Melrose, which are a tart, stiff apple right next to it in another tree, sit there. The tree doesn't get touched by the animals. I love them, but yeah, but they want the Fuji or the Hudson, right, Gold.
And
they really
know,
like,
just when they're ripe. They know when they're perfect too.
They do.
Those animals know.
Right.
I had
watch your cherry tree.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's the day.
Exactly. Well, I had a little anecdote, Tom, that I thought you would appreciate about apple pie.
Yeah.
And how we always talk about American is apple pie, and
right,
apple pie is so American. And in fact, it is not American. In fact, the first pie recipe recorded, no, the first one was in 1381 in England. And it was a recipe that called for figs, raisins, pears, and saffron, in addition to the apples and the pie. And back then, that was, their crust was called a coffin, and they spelled it C-O-F-F-Y-N. And it, the same as a coffin. And they made a paste, literally, out of flour and water, period. And they made a cylinder out of this flour and water paste and baked it. And then they put the whatever's inside, the apples and the pears or the whatever, and put a lid on it, put it in the oven. And then when they were done, they scooped out the ingredients. They never ate the crust. The crust was cement. And that's why it was called a coffin, I guess. But
I wonder if that was because lack of like a pans or something, well, utensils.
Well, they just hadn't. I mean, sugar wasn't big then,
yeah.
And butter was really hard to mm-hmm. come by. You know, rich people had butter, mm-hmm. peasants didn't. They had flour and water.
Yeah,
if they were lucky, you know.
And did they reuse the crust, or did
yeah,
they
just used it again, and they'd stuff it with something else again. But the Dutch apple pie is really from the Netherlands. And the first recorded recipe is in 1514 for Dutch apple pie. So that was well before the pilgrims got here.
Yeah.
You know, it was well before Johnny Appleseed and all that. So
and who doesn't like Dutch apple
oh,
pie?
Oh, who doesn't like that crunchy topping?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love that. So Susan, what's your favorite in-season thing right now?
Oh, boy.
Well, you were talking about leeks earlier. You said that.
Well, I was thinking about my garden, what's mm-hmm. in season in
mm-hmm.
my garden.
Mm-hmm.
And I have leeks, and I have yum. Italian parsley. I have four or five different kinds of kale. I have, what do you call those? I have collards, a couple of different kinds of collards. I've got.
Do they last all winter? Do the collards
yes.
grow all winter long?
Oh, yeah. All
oh,
that
yum.
Does chard.
Yeah.
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 So that's pretty much what's going
mm-hmm.
on.
Mm-hmm.
That's the, you know, and then of course I've got the things that I've harvested already. I've got, you know, I had a really good squash harvest. I've got spaghetti squash and butternut squash and some onions, keeper onions,
good.
Some things that
good,
I'm going to use actually for the upcoming festivities.
The upcoming festivities. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe. That, oh, Tom.
Yes, ma'am.
I wanted to ask you if you know a little food trivia for us.
Oh.
Or on this day in food history.
Yes, yes. You know, I'm full of, I love.
Just so happen to have.
I love food. I love trivia in general. You know. And first of all, you know, what sort of it's kind of trivia,
mm-hmm.
is that, you know, there's always these holidays, there are always food holidays and designations going by that we don't even know about. And this is national, today is National Fast Food Day.
It is?
It is.
Oh.
What's your favorite fast food?
Hamburger.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a particular brand?
Well, on Vashon, I like the hamburgers at Casa Bonita.
Oh, they have good hamburgers.
Oh, they have really good hamburgers.
They have
yeah.
a mean hamburger.
Yeah. But a fast food restaurant,
but that's
no.
That's not exactly fast food either. I mean, because
no.
you go into
well,
the takeout,
restaurant.
Well, it's
takeout, I
guess. Yeah,
takeout. No, it's not McDonald's
it's
or
not like
no.
a drive-through. That's
I don't
what I
do
think
that.
Of.
Do you know what else is going on this week?
Mm.
It's one of those things where I am limited in my appreciation of it.
Which is?
Is National Split Pea Soup Week.
Oh.
It's been celebrated since 1969. I didn't even know.
I
how did split pea shouldn't even get an hour. How does it get a week?
Oh, I love split pea
I know people
soup.
Who love it, love
I
it.
I love
yeah.
it. But it
yeah.
sounds like you like them about as much as you like fava beans.
Yeah.
Well, I do like the Chianti.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. You know, we were talking the other day about food and words,
uh-huh.
word foods. And I came across an article about breakfast terminology, breakfast items that are used as verbs. And I just thought it was kind of interesting. Can you think of one? Like what would be used as a breakfast item, be used as a verb? How about waffle?
Oh, yeah. And spam, or earlier,
and spam.
Spam, yeah.
Yeah. Spam's a good one. Yeah. Or pancake.
Pancake.
That you pancaked
in, yeah.
Yeah, and egg.
Made
you
a
can
hash
egg
of
him
it.
On. Made a hash of it. And cream. You know? She creamed him. And then sugar.
He really saved my bacon?
No. That would be bacon's a noun there.
Oh, right.
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 But surprisingly, sugar is big in in food words for breakfast. In other words, a story sugared with romance or a gentleman sugared his request with a smile.
Ooh.
That kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Butter.
Don't put ideas in Tom's head.
Okay.
Or like juiced, like when you're really up for something, I'm really juiced.
I'm juiced. Yeah,
yeah.
Juiced.
Yeah.
And toast.
Do you know, I do have some more, I have trivia about turkeys.
Oh, good.
Do you know about turkeys?
Yeah, I do.
Since we're talking about Thanksgiving are. We're tangentially talking about.
Yeah, we are.
Did you know
we're avoiding the subject?
most turkeys are raised on a vegetarian diet and without hormones or antibiotics. And you go, well, that doesn't seem right. Yeah, well, it's the reason that turkeys are actually hormone and steroid free is because no hormones have been approved for use in turkeys. So that's a little good news.
Oh, yeah.
The larger size of the day's turkeys is really just due to a genetic improvement, mm-hmm. Better feed and modern management practices. But they don't use hormones or steroids on them. So that's good. But oh, and those yeah. practices have allowed the world's largest turkey was a tom that weighed in at, guess how much?
87 pounds.
63.
Holy moly, Linda Nygaard. It's 86 pounds.
Oh, ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Exactly.
Better get a big oven for that one.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know how many people report drowsiness after eating Thanksgiving dinner?
Oh, tryptophan.
Yeah, tryptophan. like, do you think that's true?
No.
I don't know.
No, not really.
Isn't it?
No. You'd have to basically have like a truckload
like
of stuff.
Like eat a whole turkey
yeah,
yourself.
Like eight yeah. turkeys, yeah. Excuse me.
Yeah. Okay. So are you okay? Yep. Having a little coughing fit here.
Excuse Usually we us. Have treats and beverages.
Well, you were supposed to bring it today. Bring it up, Tom.
I realized I was supposed to bring something the minute That's when right. I got in my car. Right. I went, oh.
Uh-oh. Hey, you know, we're running out of time already.
What?
Yeah. Can you look at the clock?
That's crazy.
I would like to talk a little bit about Thanksgiving with regard to stuffing. Okay, yeah. Can we talk about that?
Stuffing, the best thing ever.
Well, it is for me.
Me too.
I love stuffing. And, you know, the thing I want to explore is how many different ways people do their stuffing. You know, it was called stuffing in the very beginning, like medieval days, because at that time they stuffed animals with animals. And it was called stuffing. And they had a lot of spelt in it and many, many vegetables. And they stuffed everything. They stuffed rabbits and pigs and their whole weekly meals. They had a lot of stuffing.
Like turducans.
Well, I guess they had turducans, yeah. But it wasn't until 1850 that stuffing became dressing.
And why so?
And the reason... the articles, I'm stuttering because I don't want you to think I said this originally. I didn't. But... some people found the word stuffing to be offensive.
Well, of course.
Why? You stuffing something in there? Oh, geez.
No, it's just, stuffing doesn't have, it's not a genteel word. Like,
well,
you know, like,
I guess
well, we stuffed our bags full of, you know, our groceries or,
well, that's
you know,
true.
Stuffing is usually sort of a you know. Yeah.
You do with pillows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dressing.
So how do you do your dressing, Susan?
Oh, I'm of a different camp. That's the one thing that I'm definitely just going to drop from my Thanksgiving.
Are you? Yeah. Okay, okay.
But I do love it.
Yeah.
Just tons of butter, tons of onions, tons of celery, mm-hmm. fresh herbs, and good bread.
And good bread,
And good chicken broth.
Yeah. How about you, Tom?
Yeah, I that's pretty much, I like a traditional just because that's probably what I was raised on, mm-hmm. you know, everything from celery. Sometimes you'd have raisins. You could add a little fruit in there.
Oh, so sausage.
Or sausage. Or,
do you put things like nuts and that kind of stuff in it? Like some people do?
Our family, no.
Yeah.
It was either. A little more purist. Yeah. You know, it was celery, onions, the bread, the giblets, but there wasn't any sausage. But growing up in the South, all my other friends, like a lot of my friends, their families had cornmeal. Cornbread dressing or
right.
stuffing,
mm-hmm. yeah, mm-hmm.
and also oyster stuffing, which I would never enter the door of my mother's kitchen.
It's a waste of oysters.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I'd rather have the oysters raw. I think.
Yeah.
Well, I want to tell you a little story about some stuffing that happened. How much time do we have?
13 minutes.
Okay, we're good. I'll make it short. So the very first time my mom made the best stuffing, and I did. Right beside her Thanksgiving dinners for, you know, 18, 19 years. And then when I was a young married woman in my early 20s, there came a visitor who insisted on making the stuffing for Thanksgiving. And I was sort of like, oh, I don't know. But anyway, she was insistent. So I let her do it. And I'm just going to tell you the ingredients. So she did, it was a half cornbread and half regular bread crumbs,
cubes.
Thank you. But she started by boiling a pound of hamburger and a pound of sausage, breakfast sausage, in just a pot on the stove, boil it till it's done, and then put it into crumbles. And then chop up your onions and celery and do the butter thing like we all do with some parsley and that kind of thing. The last thing she put in it was finely chopped dill pickles. And I just about fell over when I saw that going in the dressing. I thought, oh my God, this is going to be awful.
Where was this? What part of the
Colorado.
World? Colorado, okay.
Mm-hmm. They were from Michigan, but originally from Texas.
Oh, okay.
And this was an old recipe that her grandmother had. And that's what
God
they did.
Bless
they put
her.
Green dill pickles in it. So I was prepared to hate it. And you know what? It was so good. You couldn't, I guess the pickles are just moisture. I think, because there's no taste of dill pickles in there at all. Uh-huh. And it was really good. In fact, I even tried to replicate it for a couple Thanksgivings. But I think most people are, you know, partial to regular stuffing. We want regular dressing, lots of sage, lots of onions, that kind of thing. We were going to spend some time talking about different cultures and their Thanksgivings within the continental United States, but I think we're going to run out of time. Do you have something to read, Tom?
Do I? We were just sort of joking about finding some short little things about about Thanksgiving. The one of the things though that I was going to tell you that I found, which I knew was around here somewhere, it was Benjamin Franklin was lobbying heavily for the turkey to be our national emblem because he felt like the eagle was basically it was a predator, but it was also a scavenger bird, and he didn't think that was an honorable vocation for the emblem of our nation. And he goes, "I wish the bald eagle had not been chosen as a representative of our country. The turkey is a much more respectable bird, and with a true original native of America." And everyone will tell you how stupid turkeys are, but those are the domestic ones. The wild ones are cunning. Like if you have people who hunt turkeys, know how hard it is to to locate the little critters.
And plus, if you do locate them, they're mean sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been chased by one.
Yeah, they're mean. They can be mean.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I like that. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, one of the things about a dressing that's sort of a not a traditional, but sort of a more of an ethnic, I don't know. Anyway, sorry. I was trying to think what if it really is a dressing, but it was what my grandma used to make, and that was the Lebanese, you know, side of the family. Mm-hmm. Well, she was German, but my grandfather was Lebanese, so it was a really interesting. It was a cross cultural food. It was food made in heaven cross culturally. She was an amazing baker, and then she of course had to learn because in those days it was like, okay, you basically take on the culture of your husband, She could make great Lebanese food as well as bake great German things, pastries and baked goods. But anyway, one of my favorite things she made was, it's a dish called hashwi, and it's a rice dish, or it was like a stuffing, at least in the eyes of that family.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is basically, it's almost like sort of a rice aroni. You take vermicelli, or there's like a Lebanese pasta that you pan saute so it turns golden brown.
So it's brown, yeah.
And then you put in the rice and you cook the rice. And then in the rice, you put in chicken, and sometimes you can put in pistachios, or you put in pomegranates.
Mm-hmm.
And apricots.
Apricots, exactly, dried apricots. And it's so good. And then usually what we would do is we'd eat it with pita bread. You'd stuff it with
Pita. That sounds so good.
It's really good.
I'm really hungry right now. Thanks for bringing food for us,
Not
Tom.
A problem.
Yeah.
You know, I'll make it up to you.
I know you will. Hey, so since we are so close to time, we're gonna skip some stuff here, but I want to talk about Thanksgiving and the Native American women that I was listening to and what they were saying, because some of us are having a difficult time with Thanksgiving and the things that happened with Native Americans and, you know, sort of the colonization of everything. And these women were talking about that. And they were talking, one of the questions was, what did you lose when the colonists came? What did you lose? And they talked about the loss of their food, because if they don't have their food, they think they're invisible, and their trenches were dug, and rivers were, you know, relocated, and all the hunting happened, and they lost their food because they were moved places. Mm-hmm. And so when you lose your food, they think of themselves as having lost part of their soul, because they are. And part of that was about removal of the animal habitat in modern days, too. They've lost that for skyscrapers and highways and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And these women that were talking were Wampanoag from the Northeast. And they were talking about their own Thanksgivings and how they have Thanksgiving. They just don't call it Thanksgiving. They call it Harvest Festival. And it's when everything is harvested and they're celebrating. And it usually happens end of September, early October. So they really can't figure out why we're celebrating harvest in November, for one thing, because harvest is long done. But the herring would inform them when the season was to start, because the herring would start coming in, which they don't very much anymore. But and then they come again in the spring, and that's when their New Year starts. The Native American New Year starts in spring, which really makes sense, because that's when things start.
Was this
moving.
On the East Coast that
yeah,
this was pretty predominantly?
And so then their conversation went into how do we as Native Americans, I'm not Native, I'm talking about as if they were talking, how do we continue to thrive, and how do we incorporate the Caucasians and all the Americans into who we are? How do we let them know who we are? What can we do? And they are teaching classes. And there's a website called IndianAg.org.
Egg like E-G-G or Ag, A-G?
A-A-G.
Okay.
And it is a website where you can go to order Native American foods that are raised all over the country. So, and it's all individual little Native American businesses in different states.
Oh, that's pretty
great. That's great.
Yeah, it really it's a really good place to go. And the
what is it again?
I'll get it for you in just a second.
Okay.
I just wanted to finish this one thought. They were asking each other, how should we celebrate this harvest festival with our white friends? You know? And the suggestions that they offer to us as non-Native Americans is that we should celebrate in the best way that we can with everything that's local in our yard, in our portion of the world. And they said they would hope that we would continue to read about them and learn about them, learn their history, learn where they are right now, what they're doing. And for us to serve each other with love, because that's what they do. They serve each other with love, and they share everything they have. And so the other thing she said was, in your Thanksgiving celebration, you can set a place for the ancestors. And she said they always set a place at the table, but they often set a place outside, because there are many spirits that want to come, but they don't want to come in the house. And they also think it's fine if the animals eat it, because who knows? That could be an ancestor, because they believe that they can shapeshift.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to offer that as a way that we can honor the Native American past and present by just holding a conscious thought of what they have given and what they have lost, and what we are given because of them. And it's just a subject very dear to my heart, and I just had to say all that.
No, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that, you know, so many things we go through our days and our lives without recognizing who and what came before us and the sacrifices they've made and the rich cultures.
Right.
And the great mythology that we have built
around it. Right.
Thanksgiving, that's completely false.
It's false.
It was a fictional, you know,
well, she's
fictional cover up of some really awful things.
She was also talking about sense of place and how your food gives you sense of place. In other words, she would say, I would say to you, I am a Norwegian. They don't say that. They say, I am Sioux. I am Wampanoag, because I am that. I am not one of those. I am it. And they get that from their sense of place and their from the foods and the sort of family community kinds of things that they do. And if you partake in that mental attitude about your sense of place by eating the food that's local, you become that place. The more you eat locally, the more you become the place.
Oh, that's a great
and
thought.
I really loved that when they articulated that. I am the environment. I'm not of the environment. I am the environment. And it's kind of the spiritual aspects of eating, I guess, that they're talking about.
That's a really good point. I mean, even on a, you know, in our own lives, like think about when you grow things and when you're making applesauce from the apples you grew, or you're having you're having a sandwich with the tomatoes
whether it's
you grew.
Thanksgiving or not. Every meal.
I have a little gift for all of you that I want you to sit down and listen to, because our Susan Powell has brought a prayer for Thanksgiving.
Oh,
we were going to take some time. We don't have any time now. We're going to take some time to talk some other things, but Susan, tell us about what this prayer is to you.
Oh, this is the prayer that my grandfather always said, not just at Thanksgiving, but you know, at Sunday dinner and whatnot. And it's actually from Robert Burns. It's called the Selkirk Prayer.
Selkirk.
S-E-L-K-I-R-K.
Okay.
That we didn't go to church. We went to the Kirk. Mm-hmm. That's what it's.
Oh.
That's church in Scottish. And it's from Robert Burns. And it's, some hae meat and canna eat, and some hae none as want it. But we hae meat and we can eat. So let the Lord be thanked.
Oh. Okay, say it again. Say it slowly again.
Some hae meat and canna eat, and some hae none as want it. But we hae meat and we can eat, so let the Laird be thanked.
Oh, I just love that. Thank you, Susan. Thank you so much. What are you grateful for?
Oh, me?
I don't know.
Yeah, you know what? I tell you what, I'm most grateful in a super cornball way that I landed on Vashon. I decided my whole life was sort of focused on me getting here. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it.
But you didn't know it. Isn't that interesting?
It's kind of like...
I feel that way too.
I'm going to the high school with the nice kids. It's kind of how I look at it.
I mean, we really, really are fortunate to live here and have each other and community. Community is so important. I think Vashon has... real sense of community.
It's kind of like seeds being blown in the wind and then
and here we
finding
are.
The right place to land.
A wash on the shore.
There we go.
Yeah. Well, I hope everybody out there has a beautiful Thanksgiving, however you decide to spend it, whether you eat or not.
Yeah.
And we'll look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks. We're going to talk about some good stuff in December.
Okay, yep.
Thank you everyone for listening, and we will have some music next time and maybe a Facebook page for you to look at. You're listening to The Voice of Vashon 101.9 in beautiful downtown Vashon Island. This is Stirring the Pot, and we're finished for the day. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Ciao.